Welcome to Take Note, I'm Min Xuan. Shale Play, Poems and Photographs from the Fracking Fields is a book that explores the environmental and social impact that natural gas fracking and drilling has on the lives of the people in Pennsylvania. Poet Julia Spiker Kasdorf and photojournalist Stephen Rubin partnered up and spent 5 years documenting the effects on Pennsylvanians in Marcellus shale drilling areas. Julia and Stephen, welcome to Take Note.
Thank you so much.
So your new book includes a collection of both poems and photographs, and it's named Shale Play. Can you tell us what that name means, and how did it become the title of your book?
First of all, shale play for the industry refers to an area that is being developed for natural gas or oil. The shale refers to the shale rock, and the play, I guess, refers to the activity of the industry. But I also liked it because play suggests like playground, and it also suggests a situation where you have many voices speaking, which really describes what happens in the book.
Well, also, I think what's really useful about the title also, hopefully, is that it generates other associations as well. So some of the notions of, like, the idea of being played, essentially being taken advantage of or fooled, I think that's also, like, embedded in the title.
So there are kind of multiple meanings to it.
Yeah, maybe even some we haven't discovered yet, but...
No doubt.
The book was 5 years in making, I believe, from 2012 to 2017. It's following a rush to develop Marcellus Shale in Pennsylvania. How did you both begin to think of this issue as a subject of documentation?
Well, we started separately, independently, in 2012. In fact, we didn't even know of each other's existence or each other's work. So I'm sure Julia can share her part. But my experience was in 2011, 2012, reading a lot of news accounts, certainly following a lot of reports from State Impact and other and media publications, and following about the news about the boom, the natural gas boom in the state. I immediately became interested and, of course, concerned about the issue and its impact on the land, on the people, and wanted just to simply see it for myself, to try to make sense of it, to try to locate it, to try to possibly photograph it and document. So it just began simply by exploring, by driving through Mount Shannon State Forest in Clearfield County and looking for signs of this development, and starting by finding trucks that were driving through a state forest and being quite startled by thinking that that's not something I would normally see within a state forest. And sometimes then following those trucks to work sites where I would then met some workers, began to talk with them and photograph them. And that's the genesis of my aspect, my part of this. I don't know if Julia want to...
For me, I think it was the summer of 2011, my husband and I were riding up Route 15 to Ithaca on a motorcycle, and we stopped at Fry Brothers Turkey Ranch, which is now famous because of this book, and I guess a couple of the poems take place there. And we sat down to the table and looked across the highway, and up there on the ridge, there was all this activity, and I could not identify what was going on. You know, there were helicopters dangling what I later recognized as seismic testing tools, and there were a bunch of white pickups, and there was a trough with pipeline along it. And the waitresses explained, another waitress came over to the table, so several of them were there, and they explained that this was natural gas, and it was a good thing for their area. It had been very good for the restaurant. And I just got... Like Stephen, I became curious. Around that time, I think we got the gift of the ice hockey rink here on campus, which has its origins in the selling of mineral rights in northern Pennsylvania. So that was happening. It was something I was hearing. I happened to be working in the basement of Burroughs Building, And at that time, Sarah Koenig had an office across the hall from mine, and she was working on a story for This American Life about fracking. And she was sitting in there at her desk reading government documents on her computer screen, and every now and then she would jump up and come over to my office and say, "You won't believe this," you know. So these things were happening, but it took me a while to start asking people questions.
Can you give us a general sense of what the poems are about, and where do the stories in the poems come from?
I was desperate to come in contact with people and speak with them, and it took a while to try to. I had grown up in Westmoreland County, so I knew people there, and I had some contacts there, and I wrote to some people at Mansfield University and got connected with the creative writers there, and so I went up to Wellsboro, but I was challenged to figure out, like, how do I just talk to people, you know? And so often it began, like in the Fry Brothers Turkey Ranch, it began in public places. I would just sit at a table and spread out a map, and invariably somebody would come over and say, "Do you need help?" You know? And I would begin asking questions. Or in the case that's described in one of the poems in the Turkey Ranch, there was a worker who came in and sat down and ordered and prayed over his food when it arrived, and I was watching him. And when he lifted his head from his prayer, our eyes met, and I had to say something because I was staring at him. So the conversation started that way.
I do get a sense that a lot of the poem seems to capture either a conversation that you have with someone who has something to say, or some experience about fracking or drilling, or sometimes they just seem like the poems are just monologues of different people that you've met along the way. So I wonder, what is it like for you to write in that format, and what kind of reaction or emotion do you hope to get from that?
The poems that sound like monologues or that feel like monologues, the several I can think of, for those poems, I told the people what I was doing, and I had multiple conversations with them. And so I would sit at a kitchen table and ask questions and write down in a notebook things that, you know, their responses. And then when I finally had the poem composed, I took it back and read it to them so that I was sure that I was capturing, you know, what was true in their sense of this story.
A lot of the titles of your poems are written in plain language, and some even feel like just a name of a document. I have one example. Here's one. Citizens have their say before the Fayette County Commissioners uphold the lease of German Masontown Park. So they're not very poetry sounding. Why is that?
Well, the function of the titles in this book, I think, is almost like a newspaper headline. The job of the title is to get out the setting, get the context, so that the voices can speak, and so that they locate the reader, and the reader understands what's happening, and then we can hear the voices of the people, as I recorded them by hand.
So it's kind of like scene setters.
Yes, that's right.
Stephen, if we could talk a little bit about your photographs. You wrote that you started photographing with a focus on the physical landscape change, but then you started to get drawn to the human aspect of things. How did that transition happen for you?
So I don't know that that's exactly. I'm not quite recalling it that way. My background as a photojournalist, as a documentary photographer, is really about photographing people. And so I think that's what I was most drawn to, are the human stories of fracking, right? Both to the people who are sort of living beside the drilling and the fracking, and the kind of experiencing some of the consequences of that, for better or for worse. But also, I felt at the time in beginning this project that there was really sort of an underreported aspect of it, and that really related to the workers, the people who are working in the industry, who were sort of by necessity often were seeking out opportunity in this industry, given the minimum of opportunities available in much of rural Pennsylvania. So I was interested in kind of hearing their story, in part because I didn't feel like it was well represented, not just hearing it, of course, but also trying to represent it visually.
I wonder if you could just give us a little bit of background of the kind of documentation on environmental issues that you have done and how this project is similar or different than the work that you have previously done.
I've been working on a project that started in 2009. It's actually ongoing, documenting some of the rise and impact of wind energy in the Midwest. So that's, in some ways, looking at this idea that thinking about renewable energy is not just something in our future, but it's something actually in the present, in the now. If you were to drive across the Midwest today, you see more than just sort of mind-numbing row after row after row of corn and soybeans and wheat, but you actually see this new crop on the horizon. That's wind. That's one project. I've also done work in the Amazon and in the Ecuadorian part of the Amazon, documenting the impacts of oil development, largely by Chevron and a number of other oil companies in the Amazon, and the negative contamination and impacts that have occurred there, and the efforts by people to address that. So this project was different, certainly clear, strong environmental theme and kind of looking at the notions of impact, but it's, I think what's different about it, certainly for me, is the fact that it's local. I didn't have to travel far to do this project. It's in my own backyard or sort of in neighboring counties. And I think that's part of what seemed especially important about doing this project for me, because it's, you know, I think sometimes as photojournalists, we have tendencies to go somewhere else for a story. When, in fact, I always tell my students, the stories are all around you, right? Just look around you, look in your own backyard. So that's, I think, what makes it a little different.
I think that sense of this is a story really close to you also is shared by Julia, because you mentioned that you grew up in Westmoreland County, where you said steel mills closing and abandoned coke ovens were a part of your memories. But in the creation of Shale Play, you go back to those familiar places with purpose. What did you mean by that, and what is going back like?
Well, I think when I grew up there, I didn't know what I was looking at. You know, my school bus went every day. We drove through a town called Edna, in a woman's name, which was, of course, the name of a coal mine, and the Edna number one and Edna number two mines. And these huge heaps of black comb, or we called it bony, were just part of the landscape. And growing up there, it wasn't where I was born and it wasn't where I spent my first years, but I never felt identified with the place. The place felt dirty, ugly, violent, and I just wanted to leave. And I did, 2 weeks after I graduated from high school. So for me to go back there and understand what I was looking at and begin to try to think about fracking in relation to this long history of bituminous coal extraction, gas, I mean, lots of shallow gas wells. The glass factories in that region were all fueled by gas. And to understand it as a much larger picture, it was very helpful to me to even understand my own feelings and to complicate my own biases about how I felt about that place as a younger person. So that's something about the returning. And now I think I have a lot more affection for the place than I ever would have if I hadn't gone back.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Julia Spiker-Kastorf and Stephen Rubin, authors of the book Shale Play, Poems and Photographs from the Fracking Fields. Stephen, you mentioned that you're also very interested in the human aspect of these kind of environmental issues. You went in having the mindset of wanting to know about how the people's lives are impacted. Can you give me a sense, maybe, is it all good? Is it all bad? What's the sense that you got from your work?
Right. I think what motivated a lot of this work was certainly trying to to navigate along the divide, because it is a very polarizing issue between the people who are supportive of fracking, the people who are opposed to it. But I think the more I got into it, I realized the value of seeing things beyond that sort of simplistic black and white. There's a lot of kind of complex issues, a lot of grays in this issue. And I think as part of that, you realize that there are a good number of people who, you know, certainly who have benefited and have felt an extraordinary amount of pressure to be able to sign a lease to permit drilling on their land. In part, it's this allows them to keep their land, to keep a farm running, to provide some supplemental income that will kind of provide sort of a steady piece of income given the unpredictable nature of farming. So I think it was important, I think, for us to find those kind of complex stories. And so, for example, a farmer, a dairy farmer in Fayette County who had a number of wells on his land, and he certainly benefited from it in terms of the income that he brought. But it was also, he was, like many farmers, was very modest about that, and was not boastful, was not bragging about the fact that he was able now to afford a new pickup truck, that they were able to purchase a used harvester for their crops. That he simply, in fact, he didn't even really want to be photographed and didn't want me to sort of say that much about his story. I think it was more that he didn't want to separate himself from his neighbors. I think sometimes just by the luck of the draw, whether it's luck or unluck, you might end up with wells on your land or you might not. And so sometimes those people who would benefit financially from this would create some tensions with neighbors. So these are some of the stories that we began to uncover.
The book takes the format of both poems and photographs. And how did you decide to bring those two things together? And what might be some challenges, but also what are the joys in doing that?
Well, I could say I started out thinking of this as a documentary poetry project. And I was struggling to write the poems, to make poems that dealt with these very immediate material things and the language of everyday life, and to somehow make poems out of them. And I it was very frustrating because I felt like I wasn't getting these poems to take off. That's when I thought, these poems need pictures.
I think I've spoken some about, you know, my feeling this need for more, and I found that Julia's poetry helps extraordinary ways to animate them, to bring them to life, to provide such useful context and details and stories, and keeps them more than just sort of flat, kind of two-dimensional objects, right? So I think both of us separately come from this strong documentary tradition of wanting to record, right? Wanting to preserve, wanting to kind of capture something that we've heard or observed. But I think Julia may turn for her notebook, may reach for her notebook, may, you know, grab her pen, and I turn to my camera, I pull out my camera, I focus my lens. I mean, that's just, I think we have a similar impulse, but a slightly different response to doing that. So trying to figure out the ways that the images and the poems can fit together. Some photographs that were created in response to some of the poems that Julia had written. So the poems that were already written, and I go out with the poems in my head, just having read them and reread them and reread them, and then going out not so much to illustrate the poems, but just try to capture some sense of it, some feeling, some kind of emotional, visceral quality. So we worked in that way, in response to each other. Certainly there are many times when we traveled together and we're working on essentially like a piece together. But ultimately it came down to, great idea, let's work together. These two mediums, which were so closely related, can complement each other in so many great ways, almost like newspaper captions, that they can each have their own home, their own world, their own place, but complement each other, kind of with each having their own strengths, but also in their interaction, add even more to the work. And so that's been, I mean, that was the nitty gritty. That was getting into the thick of it and trying to find certain matches and just going through just, you know, years of photographs on this subject and trying to, you know, trying out this photo, trying out that photo, trying to think then where could it appear? Would it appear best, you know, before a poem, after a poem? The way we've structured the book is trying to kind of give each the text its own sort of space. You'll see if you have a chance to view the book that the poems typically, there's a couple of pages of text of the poem and then followed by a couple of pages of photographs, and they sort of bookend each other as you go through the book. Poems, photographs, and then back to poem, then a photograph, and a poem, and photographs. Occasionally a photograph will be slipped into a poem, or they'll extend, you know, a poem will be right next to a photograph. So we've tried to work on different ways that they can play with each other, and hopefully find some kind of very useful, effective, moving harmony that they create.
I have this one poem that's titled "What This Picture Can't Tell You." And it's next to a photograph taken during a community protest. And I wonder, Stephen, if you mind describing to us what this photograph is about.
Well, this is certainly a great challenge as a photographer. It reminds me of what's the great quote by the great photographer Lewis Hine about if I could say it in words, I wouldn't need to lug around a camera, right? But so let me try to describe this photograph. So there are five people in this photograph, and three of them are leaning against a large black car that looks kind of like an old police car. There are two people in the background who are younger. The three people in the foreground are locals. This is in the town of Point Marion, I believe. And they look like life has worn on them quite a bit. There's one woman who's, I think, standing kind of taller. So she appears to be stronger, at least in how she's presenting herself here. And she's holding a sign that says "Frackers," and then in all capital letters, "Not near our schools!" Exclamation point. "Not near our water supply!" Exclamation point. The two young people in the back are actually working on petitions that they're signing sort of in opposition to fracking in this area.
Julia, do you mind reading the beginning of the poem for us?
Okay. "What This Picture Can't Tell You." That the car, purchased for a bargain, according to the man in the black shirt, was built for cops, it's so fast. That for more than a century, almost everyone here worked at Hoetz Glass, which, among other things, made 100 trays that Richard Nixon presented on his diplomatic mission to China in 1972. The factory closed in 2004. That on a nearby building, a mosaic of sparkly glass shards depicts an albino deer that once appeared here at the confluence of the Cheat and Monongahela rivers. That the walk was organized in solidarity with Hands Across Our Land to protest the impacts of fracking and pipeline construction, according to Duane, whose great-great-grandfather grew up across the river in Greene County. Duane now lives on Cheat Lake. That the signs we all carried across the Mon and back that morning, Duane had used in other natural gas demonstrations.
So I think this is a really good example of showing how you blend the two formats together. So thank you for showing us that. In simple terms, Julia is a poet, Stephen is a photojournalist, but this book, Shell Play, could really be seen as a work of art, of journalism, and even of activism. So I wonder, how do you see your roles in creating this book? Are you playing something that's more than just what you are in simple terms?
The project for me began as an investigation. So for a long time, I said, I'm an artist, I'm not an activist. And I think I would still say that. However, what I've learned through this investigation has made me look more like an activist, I think.
So I come out of journalism, and certainly see the value of that. But there is something in, I think, in the value of an art approach to this issue that I think can add something more. I think that there's also real value in kind of a, in the expressive arts, in accessing other emotions and ways of conveying stories that help us get at not just the sort of the information of journalism or the scientific kind of data, but also get at the real human story, the real human cost of this of fracking. And I think that's what we're aiming for in this work.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In the last poem of the book, I think it's titled "Among Landowners and Industrial Stakeholders, the citizen with too much memory seeks standing to speak of recent events at Penn's Woods." And Julia, you're the citizen with too much memory. I want to know, for the both of you, how much personal stake do you feel like you have in documenting this issue, and it, whether that shows in the book at all?
One thing I think of, and I'm not sure this is precisely personal stake, but one unexpected consequence of this project was that I realized what a privilege it has been for me to come from such a long line of people who lived in one place. But what that means is I care a lot about this place and what happens to this place. And I had to think long and hard about why do I care so much? Why does this matter so much to me? And I just arrived, I mean, in working through that final poem in the book, I realized that if you stay in a place for a long time, you know a lot of inconsequential or small things about that place, and you care about the place. And so I think that's partly what led me to take on this work.
I think the maybe the flip side of this, and this is something that I think comes out in the book in your writing, is that if you're not from the place, then you care essentially less about it. I think for myself, not being a Pennsylvania native, this being my adopted home, I think the project certainly has grounded me here so much more. I feel so much more of a connection to the state than I did prior to starting this work. It feels more like a vested interest in the story and its outcome, that it's not just a project.
Julia and Stephen, thank you so much for talking with Take Note.
Thank you.
You're so welcome.
Poet Julia Spiker Kastorf and photojournalist Stephen Rubin are authors of Shale Play, Poems and Photographs from the Fracking Fields. They explored and documented the impact of natural gas fracking on the lives of people where Marcellus shale drilling is taking place in Pennsylvania. You can listen to more Take Note interviews on WPSU.org. I'm Min Xian, WPSU.